Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today, we're answering your listener questions.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 805 of the How to Money podcast.
This means we're old podcasters.
You know what? It's funny because we rolled over the old episode podcast odometer, rolled over 800, and it was an interview episode. It was with Holla, I guess, a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And we didn't even say anything about it because we don't normally banter much on the interview or ever on our interview episodes. But hey, 800 episodes, baby. That's a big deal.
It's a milestone.
It's one of those milestones. So let's take a minute to maybe thank all of our listeners out there for listening to the show for that long. I know there are folks out there, and because we hear from you. You email us. You leave the reviews, and you say, oh, I used to listen back when it was the Poor Not Poor days.
Yeah.
And that means you were listening around episode, like, 20 or 30.
It also means you're a glutton for punishment.
Which is mind-blowing. But obviously, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be making this podcast, I don't think, if we didn't have listeners. Maybe we're gluttons for punishment, and we would continue to make the episodes.
I love doing this, and so much.
Even if nobody's listening to you at all?
I don't know if I would yell into the void like that, but this is so much fun to create.
Embrace your old man, Joel. Right. No, this is an Ask How to Money episode, and we've got some great topics to get to today. A listener is asking about what we think might be the most important personal finance metric. Little tease there. Another listener is asking how she can snag the lowest car loan interest rate. And another listener is wondering what she should do because her financial cheese, it was moved. That's a reference to...
Don't touch my cheese, people.
Like a 90s business book, yep. Basically.
But it was a very popular book back then.
Yeah, but when your goals shift, how do you respond to that? We'll get to that and more during today's episode.
Yeah. Real quick, I just wanted to mention, Matt, in a recent newsletter, by the way, if you're listening and you haven't signed up for the newsletter... Go do it. Howtomoney.com/newsletter comes out every Tuesday, chock full of advice. You'll get it tomorrow morning in your inbox, actually, if you do it right now. So
hurry up.
Yeah, but we had put something about protecting yourself with password manager sites, right? Like by using a password manager to because there's a lot of people out there, Matt, who are using the same password, have used the same exact password on all of their logins. Mm-hmm. And with all the information that's floating out there around us.
Password 123?
Yeah. That can be. Yeah,
you don't want to use that one.
No, you don't. And you want to shake up your passwords for different sites because let's say some crook does figure out what your password is. Well, instead of being able to just get into that one account, now they can get into a bunch of your accounts.
You don't want that to happen.
Right. So
no
we,
way.
I think we had mentioned LastPass and Bitwarden as being two good options. But then listener Graham reached out and he said, actually, Bitwarden's better because LastPass had a breach themselves.
They themselves had a data breach, which that's basically, hey, this is your job. Like your job is to protect the data, is to protect the passwords, the passkeys, and
when it happens to
stuff when that happens.
When it happens to a credit bureau, like that is supposed to be their job, but I realize that they don't care. But you should you assume that the password that these companies actually do care, right? But LastPass apparently had this flub, which obviously impacted its users. So I would say Bitwarden is probably the place to turn. And the cool thing is Bitwarden has that free tier. It's open source. And because of that, if you've been looking for a password manager, you can get one free of charge, which is pretty cool.
Nice. Have you tried
I've checked it out. I haven't fully made the switch over there, but I don't know. I'm leaning towards it.
I'm still stuck in my ways. I've got my hidden documents in password-protected locations, and then the documents themselves are also password-protected. And, of course, I get all weird with my passwords. And you know this because anytime you're like, hey, I need...
The internet password at your house.
Yeah, that or even something with work where you're like, hey, share the whatever password with me for whatever service. And I'm like, okay, but brace yourself. And also, I tend to like only send you half of it, and then I scrawl the other half on a post-it note that I make you destroy.
it's very James Bondy.
We take Mission security Impossible. Seriously around here, Joel.
Yeah.
But let's introduce our beer real quick here. This is an Alpsy beer by High Grain Brewing that was donated to the show by Mike and Christy. Joel, I'm looking forward to enjoying this Dunkel. And we'll share our thoughts at the end of the episode.
Sounds good. I will dunkle on you next time we play basketball.
Probably can. Can you dunk?
My ups are not so great, but I am very tall, so people assume I would be able to, but I haven't tried.
Like in high school or college, could you dunk?
Not really, no.
Oh.
Yeah. But now that I'm 40, I probably can, right, Matt?
Well, you have been focusing on your health more. You've got a trampoline in the backyard. That's got to amount to something.
All right, we'll see. I'll try soon. I'll try.
I bet you jump more on the trampoline now than you did when you were in high school.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Boom.
Mm-hmm.
Age is just a number, Joel.
All right, I'll test it out soon. But let's get on to the listener questions. And if you have a question for us, we'd love to take it on the next Ask How to Money episode. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask for simple instructions for how to submit your question. It's basically recording a voice memo on your phone and emailing it to us. It's pretty chill. Matt, let's get to the first question for this episode, though. This is kind of a nerdier question, maybe a little inside baseball about savings rates.
Hey, guys, this is John from Ohio. A question that I've always had in regards to calculating my personal savings rate. Is there a standard way to handle employer contributions to my 401k and HSA accounts? Do they get ignored for the purpose of this calculation? Does it get added to the numerator only? Add to the numerator and denominator? These contributions can really swing my overall personal savings rate quite significantly, depending on how I treat them. I love listening to your show. Thanks, guys.
Well, John, we appreciate you listening to the show. But yeah, Joe, let's go ahead and get nerdy with savings rates here.
I love these kinds of questions because they're the things people think about. They're like, okay, cool. Matt and Joel said that this is the kind of savings rate I should have. How do I know what it is?
Yeah.
And it seems like it should be really simple, easy thing to figure out. But as John found out, it's actually maybe more complicated than it seems on its surface.
There's a few additional variables that you have to take into account. But yeah, let's talk about how much you should be saving, John. And I feel like the standard personal finance advice out there has been to save 10% of your income. And we've always felt like that actually falls short and that it's not going to allow you to make progress quickly enough. So because of that, we raise the bar. We think that 15% is a better starting point. And then beyond that, we'd love to see people increasing their savings rate over the years from there. And granted, some folks listening, they might just be getting started and they're just trying to raise their savings rate up from like the national average, which is something like 2%.
Yeah, 3%, something like that.
Which is not going to be enough to retire comfortably. But there's no shame in that. It's great that you're getting started, but you know, the 15%, that is our preferred starting line. Sometimes it takes a bit of time to get up to that, what we think is sort of the standard.
Yeah.
And John, hopefully that's around where you are without you having to kind of play with the numbers and, and fudge it a little bit.
There is that reality too, that just even if the goal is starting line of 15%, a lot of folks are going to start behind that. It's going to take a while just to get worked up to that number. But that's actually, like you said, Matt, a far higher savings rate than what we have across the country. Something like 3.5%. It's been going down post-pandemic. We had that brief spike when a lot of money got thrust into people's accounts, the stimmy checks, and of course, the savings rate has dropped dramatically since then. And so I think it's no wonder that people feel like they're living on the financial precipice. When you're saving such a meager amount of your income, it's going to feel like you don't have enough money. And the CFP board actually recommended different savings rates based on where you currently stand in regards to earnings, current savings rate, and your age. And so,
makes sense.
For instance, if you're just starting to save in your 40s, it's crucial to basically have a baseline savings rate of 20 to 25%.
Ooh.
And so I think they're spot on, though, right?
Yeah.
It feels like it adds insult to injury. But the truth is, and everybody knows this, when you talk about compounding returns, when we talk about starting late or getting to the investing and savings game later on, the later you start, the more you've got your work cut out for you. And so it just goes to show the power of beginning investing in your teens or 20s. And then your savings rate, by the way, not only determines how long it takes to reach full financial freedom, but it also, of course, impacts how long it takes you to reach the different stages of financial independence that we talk about, because financial independence is not an all or nothing proposition. A higher savings rate is, of course, for instance, is going to mean you can take that 6-month sabbatical in your 30s or quit your job for a less lucrative passion gig. It's an important personal finance metric. And so it is kind of this nerdy thing that we're going to dive into the details of. But it also impacts your life. It impacts the choices you're able to make. I think of it as much more than just two kind of financial nerds batting back and forth specifics here. It's like...
the implications are significant.
Yeah.
No. So you know what this makes me think of? It's funny. Like before we hit record, we're talking about running, because again, like, we're taking care of our bodies more as we get into middle age. You and I, we're both going to be running the Peachtree Road Race.
Right.
Really looking forward to that.
An Atlanta staple that I've never done before.
I'm pretty sure it's the world's largest 10K. That's what they always
say. There we go.
I think that's what they always say.
I hope I don't get trampled.
But it's hard for me not to make parallels, I guess, or whatever. Other examples from health. And it makes me think of the more reading and research that I'm not doing research. I'm just reading other people's research. And VO2 max. It keeps coming up as this number that's an incredible measure of cardiovascular health.
Mm-hmm.
And you can obsess over other numbers, right? You can look at, oh, what's my caloric intake? Oh, what's my weight? That's kind of like a terrible measure.
Max heart rate.
Yeah, like there are all the even steps. But ultimately, all of those things feed into your ability to remove oxygen from the air, which is your VO2 max, basically. And so in a similar way, I think folks can obsess over the number of subscriptions that they have, or their credit score, or they could focus on boosting their income. They could focus on what their net worth is. But all of that sort of plays into the ability for you to save more and invest for the future so that you can actually retire on that money. And so in a similar way, I feel like
the savings rate is the VO2 max.
I think so.
Okay.
Like it's a crucial number. And so that's why we took John's question, and why we're spending so much time talking about it. But he wants to specifically know whether or not he should include that employer match when he's calculating his savings rate. Sounds like he's got a generous employer, and you know, some of those 401k funds are getting matched, but also his HSA contributions as well. That's huge.
That's doubly awesome.
That's thousands and thousands of dollars there in benefit. And that's obviously going to make a difference in his ability to grow wealth. But do they get factored into the calculations? This is a tough question. And I'm going to play it safe and say that it depends. Because if you are an incredibly frugal person and you have sacrificed, you front-loaded the sacrifice, it likely can't hurt to include the match in those calculations. You know, you're looking at the numbers, you want to kind of see the number go up. But if you're just getting started out and maybe you're wanting to change the math so that you can like save less and spend more, I would say that that's probably a bad move. And so it kind of comes down to the heart.
What's the motivation behind it?
Yes. What is the motivation? What is at the heart of why John is asking this question?
Are you trying to make your savings rate look better than it is? Or are you the kind of person who's already done the hard work and you're like, come on, can I dial it back just a touch? And we, I feel like we try to be generous on this podcast, Matt, with people who have done the right thing over a significant period of time. Yeah, you can dial back your savings rate. Like, there's no need to keep pushing it forward. At some point, if you've kept your wants and desires in check and your savings rate has been blistering for a lot of years and you've built up a substantial nest egg, you can take the foot off the gas at some point.
Basically coast fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, no need to pretend that your number is any lower than it actually is.
And that's a real problem for some people who have been, you know, consume a lot of personal finance information and have worked their butts off for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think you're right. The motivation matters on how you're going to calculate that savings rate. And let's say your employer makes a 5% contribution. You're like, great. Now this means I only have to sock away 9 or 10% of my money. And then I'm right there at that base threshold Matt and Joel talk about. And you're just trying to hit the bare minimum. Well, I think then maybe you're tricking yourself, and there are ways that you should probably alter your thinking so that you can actually push yourself to go a little bit harder, right?
Exactly.
And so that employer match can be amazing, but I think typically we would say, no, do not factor that into your savings rate, because yeah, the average match is in the 3% area. Some are even more generous. But while you certainly can, I guess I'd say it's better to leave it out of the calculations, because that match, it can go away in an instant.
That's true.
And so we saw that happen during the pandemic, Matt. Like, When a company ends up in a tough financial situation, the employee match is often the first perk to get the boot. And let's say you change jobs and now your new employer doesn't have a match, or you opt to go work for yourself. All of those things could therefore take that away, and you don't have the muscle that's been developed enough to have that higher savings rate apart from the match, and that's not necessarily a good thing. So
yeah, especially if you're using it to justify additional spending, and it's very easy to get used to an inflated lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like once you start spending that money on certain things in your life, it's tough to put the cat back in the bag. We got chastised about using cat metaphors.
Oh, yeah.
It's tough to put the toothpaste back in the tube.
That's right.
And so the ability to justify excessive spending, that's also a good reason to not include those employer contributions.
Yeah, because it can go. I worked for a company just doing some side work, Matt, and all the employees in an instant, man, their 401k match was taken away. This was last year. And I just remember hearing there was a lot of consternation, concern from
that
a lot of those
sucks.
Employees.
Yeah.
It does suck. And of course, if you're calculating that into your savings rate, boom, it's down 3% in an instant. Are you going to be able to come up with that additional 3% to get your savings rate back up there? And plus, I don't know. I kind of like erring on the side of conservatism, just kind of knowing that, well, I'm saving 15. My employer's offering 3. I guess in some ways I can feel even better about myself because I got an 18% savings rate.
Totally. Yeah. Like, so another reason too that I want you to avoid taking it into account, John, is because I want that savings rate to be a reflection of what it is that you are doing, right? I want it to be a reflection of the amount of money that you have socked aside, the discipline that you've enacted upon yourself, right? Like it's like a score of your ability to deny some of the temptations that you're facing to spend your money.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that way,
and to love future you.
Yeah, in that way, as you see that savings rate tick up, there's something in those numbers, and I want it to be a reflection of just all the hard work that you're putting in. Although that being said, now that I think about it, your employer is not likely to give you a match unless you are contributing at all to your 401k. And
mm-hmm.
so it is, I guess, obviously somewhat of a reflection of the fact that you are doing some good work, John.
Yeah.
So if you want to include it, I'm not going to beat you up for it. But I think for most folks out there, it's probably best to try to avoid doing that.
John could kick your butt anyway.
I think so.
Well, and if you are going to include it in the numerator and the denominator, like you asked, John, because it's essentially payment in the form of savings. So I would just include it on both fronts. And this is something that can get wonky, Matt, I think, as we've kind of waded into already in the answer to this. And depending, I think, on exactly how you calculate your savings rate, it's kind of like how you factor in pre-tax versus post-tax contributions. Your savings rate percentage can vary significantly. So depending on how you're running the numbers, this is kind of like when people say that you can make statistics say anything, you can make statistics lie. I think the same thing is true, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of beef up your savings rate by the way you're calculating it, or you can make it look a little more meager. So just make sure you're not taking the most liberal approach to make it look like you're doing better than you actually are. And
totally.
By the way, I think it's important to mention too that savings rates, when we say that, it factors in money that is flowing into savings and into investments. And you might be doing a little bit of both at the same time, right? You might be socking more money into savings for medium-term goals and also socking a big portion of that. Hopefully, after you've got that emergency fund up and running, you're funneling most of that money into investments and not just savings. But I think once you've reached a sweet spot of savings, all of your quote-unquote savings will be funneled into investment accounts, right?
Yep.
That's kind of the goal.
But I think the most important thing is just to be consistent. So whatever it is that John decides that he's going to go with, just don't change it, right? This isn't necessarily something that you need to obsess over, but just choose a metric that you're happy with, and then consistency. Stick with it, don't change it, and then that way you've got a nice baseline, essentially, right?
But you said don't change it, except for maybe change it in the upward trajectory slowly over time. So, for instance, we talk about increasing that 401k contribution 1% every year, something like that,
right? I'll say don't change the formula. So, like, once you've identified what tack that you're going to take, John, just don't change that.
Yeah.
But yes, if you can, boost your savings.
Because again,
boost your investing.
That's 15% is the starting line, right? Like, we want people to, over time, increase that, because the more you're able to set aside over the years, the more options you have for yourself earlier on in your life. Like that sabbatical or job change, those are big life decisions that are hard to do if you don't have a significant savings rate.
That's right, man. But we've got more to get to. We're going to hear from a listener who seems like she's set for retirement, but at the same time, she doesn't have any money set aside in her actual retirement accounts. How? Well, we'll get to that and more right after this.
Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/howtomoney. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. All right, we're back from the break. We got more money questions to get to on this episode. Next question comes from a listener whose credit score has improved, and she's trying to take full advantage of it.
Hey, guys. Alexandra from Pittsburgh here. Have a quick question to ask you. I bought my car in 2022, and I used that to rebuild my credit, basically. I refinanced it a year later, and I lowered my payment, and I got a slightly better interest rate. However, my credit's gotten better since, and I'm wondering, is there a way to negotiate interest rates after you refinanced with the bank, or you always have to refinance to lower the interest rate? And how does this work with a vehicle that's depreciating in value? This is a 2018 Chevy Cruze. Thank you. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Great question, Alexandra. And I'll point out, you are one of the rare folks who could actually benefit from refinancing right now, largely because it sounds like your credit has improved so much. Rates have actually been on the rise, which means refinancing makes sense for far fewer folks. So I think what that might mean is that lenders are going to be happy to hear from you because their refinancing business has largely dried up.
Yeah.
But for you, because of your financial position, because of the fact that you've increased your score, you're in a different boat, basically. And you said that you were able to use your car loan, by the way, to kind of rebuild your credit score. And that's in large part because the credit bureaus, they take your credit mix into account. And so I think there's a chance that you introduced an installment loan when maybe before all you had were revolving lines of credit that were available to you. So now you've got this nice mix. Like, they see your credit report and they're like, oh man, this is a well-rounded individual right here.
That's healthy.
It's healthy. It's like a college who's looking to hand out scholarships and they see a baller athlete who also took tons of AP classes and has like a 4.0 and is like the valedictorian other class.
Yeah.
It's like, oh man, they're killing it on both fronts.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's
what Alexandra's doing with her credit score.
And can you imagine, by the way, being a mortgage lender right now? I got to imagine the business has dried up on so many ways.
Yeah.
There's fewer homes being sold. Nobody wants to refinance right now.
No
so
way.
It's just a tough business to be in. And so you're right. I think it probably similar note on the car refinancing front. they're probably hearing crickets most days. That's so when true. Alexander calls, they will be thrilled to take your call. And so, yeah, you ask if
can we take you out to lunch?
Right. Like, exactly.
What you got going on right now? Like,
right.
Like literally right now.
So I think if you could, she asked Matt about negotiating the rate that she has with her current lender. The truth is probably not, right? You're often able to negotiate an interest rate if you're buying a car from a dealership. That's one of the things they might be willing to budge on in order to make the sale go through. If you like say, listen, you're saying 7%. I'm not going to buy unless you can get me down to 5%. Well, they might try to meet somewhere in the middle. But once you've got a loan in place, you aren't likely going to be able to go back and ask the current lender to lower the interest rate moving forward. So, well, I might, if I were you, call my current lender to see if they have any incentives for you to do a refinance with them. Like, hey, current customer discount, my credit's better. Can you give me a better rate? Your best bet is almost inevitably just to do another refinance with a different lender. It's not necessarily to go back and try to renegotiate those terms that you've currently got in place.
That's right. Yeah. It's the good news, though, is that when you are refinancing a car loan, there aren't typically massive additional fees attached, which is unlike when you refinance a mortgage. But there are often some fees involved, and that's going to just depend on the specific lender that you're with. So there might be, let's say, a prepayment fee with your current lender, or there might be origination fees with other lenders as well. That's just something to keep an eye out for.
To the tune of hundreds of dollars, potentially $400 or $500.
Yeah, and so I would say if there's a prepayment fee, that could be a reason to completely avoid refinancing. That's when I would, let's get back in touch with your current lender.
Yeah, and depending on how much it is, right?
Exactly. But, you know, if that's something that you can avoid, if you can avoid all of those fees, I would say there's, you know, no harm, no foul to refinance your car loan when a better deal is available. I think everyone's out there looking to try to pay less in interest over time. Start shopping around. See what you can find. See what you can reduce your rate to. And I would say the best place to look at might be local credit unions. Check out Capital One. There's also this site called myautoloan.com. I'd actually probably start with them, My Auto Loan, since they do everything online. They make it pretty easy. That's one of the biggest barriers, one of the biggest hurdles to get past is just the hassle factor.
Yeah.
But then on top of that, they don't charge any origination fees. So that's huge. So you should be able to look up current rates. That's something you could even do tonight after listening to this episode.
For real.
And I think you could also look up your current rates with the local credit unions that you've heard of that are in your area as well, if you don't already have a relationship with a local credit union.
Check out two or three in the metro area where you live. Go on their site. Typically, they've got a little spot where you can click rates, and you can check out mortgage rates and car loan rates and HELOC rates. And so flip through those sites and kind of see. And oftentimes, Matt, they'll break it down by the age of the vehicle, because typically, the older the vehicle, the higher interest rate that it's going to come with. So the newer the model you're buying, the better interest rate you're going to get. But because this is a 2018 model that Alexandra has, it's probably going to come with a slightly higher interest rate. But still, because of her better credit, she might be able to reduce that rate. She didn't actually say what her current rate is. I'd be curious to know. Depending on what it is, there could be a substantial discount, even though rates have gone up, right? And so I would say the nice thing, like you mentioned, is you don't have to leave the comfort of your home. And Alexander, she mentioned the last time she refinanced that she was able to lower her payment, by the way. That's cool, but it's also not what I would prioritize, right? like folks who refinance regularly, they might find themselves lengthening the payback period, which means they're underwater in the car for longer. So the goal is not necessarily to get the lowest monthly payment, right? You don't want to put yourself in the position of being underwater in the car for a long period of time. I would say that getting the lowest rate is the most important thing, even if it means taking a shorter term and increasing your monthly payment amount. Because ultimately, our goal, what we want for you, is for you to be out of debt and paying the least amount overall for your car, right? So that is, of course, if you can financially handle those increased payments.
But exactly.
Really, that's the goal here. It's not just to lengthen the loan as long as possible. We hate long car loans.
Yeah, don't stretch those payments out.
No. This,
the lower rate certainly trumps the lower payment. And the goal is just to become car debt free as soon as possible and hopefully to never have a car payment again in your life. So we're pumped that you're paying more attention to your finances, your credit score. You're able to see that grow. And this is, of course, going to continue to give you access to better terms when you are borrowing, perhaps if you are looking at purchasing a home in the near future. But simultaneously, don't go overboard with it, because just because you can now snag a lower rate with a loan, new loan products that are now available to you, that doesn't mean that you want to put more emphasis on borrowing. Most debt is still working against your ultimate goal of a sense of financial freedom, where you are the one earning interest because you've got lots of savings in the bank as opposed to you making the interest payments to the banks.
Yeah, I think you and I, Matt, we have a more nuanced take on debt. We're not debt haters all the way, but car loan debt is certainly one of those that we frown upon.
Don't like it.
It's not like a never okay sort of thing, but it is a mostly let's avoid this thing type of vehicle, and let's hope Alexander can improve this debt, but the goal ultimately is to eradicate it, like you said. So, all right, Matt, let's get to our next question. This one's all about how future guaranteed streams of income impact how you should be saving for retirement now.
Hey there, Matt and Joel. This is Ashley in Sacramento. I really wish you guys were around when I was in my 20s. Alas, I am now 61, and the only real retirement savings that I have is my public service pension, which I'll probably start dipping into in about 7 years. So I'll be taking home a really good portion of the salary that I'm currently earning. So I do have two questions for you. The first one is, how does a pension affect the money gears? And the second question is it really worth opening a retirement account this late stage in the game? And if so, what type of account should I be considering? Thank you so much. I really love the show. Keep up the good work.
Oh, Matt. A pension. What an incredible thing to have. Congrats to Ashley for having that in her retirement repertoire. The fact that it's going to provide pretty darn close to your current level of pay, that's a massive win. And most of our younger listeners, Matt, they're probably scratching their heads right now. They're like, what is that?
Audi Whatty?
Yeah. What are you talking about? Well, I actually have a really small pension from when I worked in radio for a while. But
you're over there bragging.
Well, pay was incredibly low, so it's not huge. And also, I wasn't there for, like, you typically to have
a reminder, I said incredibly small.
Yeah. Because, like, to have a substantial pension, typically that means being at the same place for decades. And a pension can also kind of work as golden handcuffs. And so, in some ways, not having a pension means you can be a little more mobile in the workforce, potentially increase your income a little more because you're more likely to move on and not just stay put because the pension's coming. But
maybe a bit more mobility in the workforce when there aren't pensions involved, when we get to take care of our own futures ourselves.
That's right. So a few years before I left that job, actually, they stopped increasing the pension for years worked. So it made it a much easier decision for me to leave.
So I was like, deuces.
Cool, peace out.
I'm out of here.
That's right. So mine is obviously chump change compared to Ashley's. Is better than nothing, but like generous pensions like hers are obviously much harder to come by these
days.
That's
right. Okay, so how should Ashley consider her pension? How should that impact how she saves and how she invests? And we'll take a step back here and let's look at retirement, because it was traditionally referred to as a three-legged stool. It was all about the pension, yes, but also Social Security and then your personal savings. And for that stool to not be wobbly and rickety, you needed a healthy dose of all three of those things. And so for folks who don't have a pension, what that means, though, is even more dedication is going to be needed on the personal savings leg. And so for a lot of folks out there who are listening to this, you do not have a pension. For the most part, it's going to fall on you. It's you, and of course, you're going to have some Social Security. But if, Ashley, you're the one asking the question here, if you do have a pension, this does mean that you probably don't need to go quite as hard. We were talking about the savings rate earlier. Her savings rate doesn't need to be quite as robust. She doesn't necessarily need to get after it like John is probably doing, right? Like where he's kind of crunching the numbers. He's tweaking the formula, trying to find a way to see how he can dedicate more money towards his own future.
Well, the nice thing about a pension, similar to Social Security, is that it's this kind of guaranteed stream of income, right? So that it's not wobbly, or if the market goes through an extended bear market, you're not looking at a smaller withdrawal amount because, hey, the 4% rule says I can't take as much out this year. So it's nice to have those kind of guaranteed streams. But I'll say this, Ashley, you should also be working to shore up your retirement through personal contributions. Matt, I think largely because of the three-legged stool analogy you just gave, right? The pension combined with Social Security income, well, it could be enough, and it likely will be, but I'd like to have more of a buffer, personally. And so
I think she might be able to retire fairly comfortably, but like you said, let's get a little more padding in there just to make sure that when she quits work, she's able to land on a nice cushion of money.
Exactly. I think it's going to just give Ashley more options in retirement. And so I would consider, she asked about what account, I consider opening up a Roth IRA and maxing out those contributions for the next 7 years. And that means you can sock away $7,500 still for last year, $8,000 for this year. And the reason you can sock away more than what other people are able to is because you're over the age of 55 and you qualify for that catch-up contribution amount. And so simple math tells me $8,000 bucks times 7 years equals $56,000. That's not factoring in earnings, so it's likely to be double that or more.
The junk's going to compound.
Right. So yeah. There's no harm, I would say, in socking away more money if you're able to. Matt, the other nice side of that is by contributing more to retirement accounts and not just living on everything you're bringing home, you're also kind of reducing the amount that you need to fund in retirement because you're getting used to living on just a little bit less.
Yeah. So one other thing, it's funny, she mentioned that she wished that we were around when she was in her 20s. Well, and you mentioned the Roth IRA. Roth IRA didn't exist. The IRA existed. I think that's been around for like 40 plus years or whatever. But the Roth IRA was introduced in the 90s. So that wasn't even something that you could have taken advantage of.
That's true.
We weren't recommending our favorite. And even if we were wise enough to have done that when we were kids, you couldn't have even contributed to that while you were in your 20s. Well, we weren't kids.
I guess I just looked it up because I wasn't sure. I knew it was like the 1998. So
98?
Yeah.
That was a good year, baby.
So I guess I was 14. I get my first job at Chick-fil-A.
Senator Roth.
I probably could have started a Roth then. I just didn't know about it then.
That's right. But Joel mentioned the Roth IRA. We think that prioritizing working with one of our favorite low-cost providers like Vanguard, Fidelity, or Schwab, that's who you should be looking to if you don't already have an account with them. And it sounds like you don't, because it sounds like you have fully relied on your pension. But something else, you'll probably want to invest those dollars in a target date fund instead of the standard S&P 500 index, which is what we typically recommend for folks who are in their wealth building phase of life. And this is because you'll actually be pulling some of those dollars back out of the account in the not too distant future. Your investing timeline, it's shorter, and so it's going to be better to have a more conservative mix of investments. You're going to have a lot more of your dollars invested in bonds as opposed to in stocks. And so again, the pension, it's nice, it's a luxury, but we also don't think that a generous pension, that it just completely mitigates the need to invest. Although for most folks, it will mean that you can just get away with investing a much smaller percentage of your pay. And I'll also say too, it's worth thinking through that some of your dollars you may not want to invest at all. Again, it comes down to your timeline, but if you have some big items that you're looking to purchase shortly after retirement, or let's say you've got a big trip planned to go around the world, if you know that there are going to be some big expenses in the near future, it might make sense to, instead of investing those dollars, to even like maybe put that money in a high yield savings account or even a CD where, you know, you're getting a guaranteed rate for a certain amount of time, at which point you'll get guaranteed that you'll get all that money back because.
And more.
And
interest.
I guess if you're looking at a period of time that's any less than 3 years, you have a higher chance of the money invested going down in value because of the fluctuations of the market. And so think through to some of those future expenses that you might have shortly after retirement.
Yeah.
Or even before, even like leading up to retirement, you might be thinking, all right, this is something I want to drop a whole lot of money on. Just keep that in mind as well.
And I think, so again, going back to that pension, Social Security combo might fund all the lifestyle you need, but then maybe this is money that you can give away, or it's money for that big trip that you haven't budgeted for with the just kind of general living expenses being taken care of. You can think of this as kind of like a gravy sort of slush fund, which is kind of a fun thing to have when you reach those retirement years, especially those early retirement years, right, where you want to kind of live it up and take advantage of the few years where, the first few years in particular, that you're not working. And so I will say this too about pensions. Ashley specifically is guaranteed a significant monthly amount via the pension at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for everyone else out there, if you're working a job that offers a pension, and let's say you're young, you're in your 30s, it would be a bad idea to bank on that funding your entire retirement. Pensions, especially from private employers, can be taken away in an instant, right? Like, it's that rug pull that I got. It's multiple years ahead of me leaving that job. It's like, hey, guess what? We're not going to add any more to your pension from here on out, no matter how long you stay here. But, you know, the people I was working alongside who had been there for 20, 25, 30 years, they had significantly more money, significantly more assets built up in that pension. So I guess I would just say, don't let the existence of a pension, the current existence of a pension, lull you into a false sense of security, thinking that's what's going to take care of you in the future, and you can just kind of like coast, right?
Yeah. So you said security, which also makes me think of Social Security. And I think there's an argument to be made to not overly count on Social Security as well. We've talked about this fairly in depth on the show before. We think that there's a good chance that benefits will remain. It's not like it's going to completely go bust.
But maybe not in their current form.
There's a good chance it could change, though, whether that's the benefits that reduces, or maybe the retirement age gets slightly, gradually, very, you know, very slowly over time gets pushed back.
Or in order to truly keep it solvent, probably both.
Yeah. And so especially considering, so do you know what the average life expectancy was when they created Social Security back in the 30s?
It was essentially like 62, right? Or 59
I think
or something.
Literally, I think it was 59 and a half.
Okay.
And the life expectancy, it's like 58, 59. The life expectancy today is 78, 79. Like literally it's 20 years beyond what it was back then, but the retirement age is still the same at 65. And so it wasn't created to have been used all that often.
Right.
And now we have a massive population that's quickly aging, which is awesome. It's incredible that the benefits that we've seen, the technological advances in medicine and health, that it is allowing folks to live longer. But what that means is, man, it's putting a whole lot of strain on Social Security.
And especially given the dynamics that, well, and the
popular workforce. And,
that's right.
Yeah.
And so more and more people now on Social Security, increasingly every single year, and fewer people paying into the system.
Yeah. It makes me think of like a third world, you know, where there aren't regulations and you see like all these power lines coming out of a transformer box. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's like every additional year, there's an additional line that kind of just gets shoved into it. And at some point, you're like, oh my gosh, that thing is about to just explode.
Whole thing's going
to
blow up. For sure. For sure.
That's what it feels like. And so we just want to put that on your radar as well. That's another consideration. It may not be as robust by the time any of us retire. And yeah. So it's also beneficial to make personal contributions as well.
Yeah.
That's
and the closer you are, I guess, the more likely you are to get what's promised to you when you log into the Social Security website. But,
absolutely.
Yeah, the younger you are, maybe create, again, a little more of that buffer, a little more of that margin of error.
Yeah, Ashley's probably fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sorry, Ashley. I hope I wasn't at all attempting to like freak you out.
Yeah.
And I don't think we did. You're good, Ashley.
Last thing I want to mention, one other thing to consider, is what your living expenses are going to be in retirement, right? Are you going to have a paid off car, a paid off mortgage? You might not actually need to invest as much either, right?
She has fewer debt obligations. Yeah, dude.
So socking away more, I think, makes sense. But just keep that in mind, too. I don't think you need to fret about this because you are set up largely by these other two massive sources of income you're going to have. But it's also not a bad idea to plan for the rainy day and start saving more as well.
That's right. And we've got more to get to. We'll finally get to that financial cheese question. What's that all about? We'll talk more personal finance right after this.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the a.m. in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/howtomoney. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach.
Do.
Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. All right, Matt, we're back. We're talking about financial cheese. Is it Gruyere? Is it Parmesan? Is it just basic cheddar? Who knows?
Do you have a favorite type of cheese?
I like white cheddar.
I'm
very basic.
You're like from the heartland. That's like middle America white cheddar.
Which I got to be honest, like my favorite place in the United States I visited over the years, people-wise, Wisconsin.
Yeah?
Heartland people, they're the best. Not to hate on the coastal elites, but I don't know. I love the Midwesterners.
Is Atlanta considered a coastal elite city?
I don't even know.
No, because we're not technically on the coast. You can't see water. That's one of the downsides of Atlanta is the fact that we don't have like a nice, attractive large body of water.
Hate on the Chattahoochee.
We got the hooch.
Yeah,
and it's a large body of water, not so attractive though.
That's a good point. All right, let's get to the Facebook question of the week. This one comes from Amanda. She says, "So I met some financial goals. Just bought my dream house. I feel like I've hit my goal, but now my question is, what's next? The sky's the limit, as long as I'm being financially responsible, of course. I've been thinking about the next stages of life and what I want to get out of it. I guess I've been so concentrated on reaching this one particular goal, I haven't thought much about the next goal." Mm-hmm. She says, "Yes, I have a fully funded emergency fund. Yes, I'm saving a lot for retirement. This leads me to wonder, what is everyone else saving for? Is it that bucket list vacation, a vacation home, a new deck or patio? Just checking in to see what others are saving for."
Very nice.
Yeah, it was interesting to see the responses in here because, of course, in the How to Money Facebook group, everybody's got something they're saving for, you know?
Sure. So, well, I love this question because clearly there are listeners out there who will be envious, right? They are not where Amanda is, and that is where they want to be. But yeah, on the other hand, you've got How to Money listeners, and they are crushing it. They've hit big goals. And they're also not sure where to funnel those additional dollars. And if you are fairly frugal, if you are investing regularly, if you're keeping your wants in check, you're bound to run up against this question. This is a good problem to have. And we think it's worth talking about how it is that you should proceed. And by the way, so the whole financial cheese thing, it's a reference to a book, Who Moved My Cheese? It's like a modern day business parable about reacting.
From 30 years ago.
Yeah. Again, from the 90s, perhaps?
Yeah. Still modern, I guess. Yeah.
So I don't know, Amanda, maybe it's worth checking that book out from the library and thinking through what it's focusing on is the process of change. Thus the who moved my cheese. And there are certain reactions that you can have. You can, you know, approach it from a more defeatist standpoint, or you can kind of enjoy the fact that, oh my gosh, I have now the ability to pursue another goal. And ultimately, that's the direction that we want to kind of push you towards.
Yeah. Okay. So some of the responses, Matt, were really good. I mentioned that. So let me just go over a couple. And I think maybe they can be instructive in at least kind of provoking some thought about what could be next.
Yeah, just to spitball some ideas a
little bit. Yeah, because I think sometimes you're like, you do get stuck, and it's really nice to hear what somebody else is trying to achieve, and then you're like, oh, okay, actually, that sounds good. And then run it through your own filter, right, about what matters to you and what you and your family, whether that aligns with your philosophy or not. But let's mention a few. Home personalization and reno work, that was one. Security, or just options, that was another thing. So people were like, I'm just building up even more bank, even though I met those goals, because I just want more options in the future, which mm-hmm. I think basically investing more is a recommendation in that case. Someone else said that now is a great time to prioritize giving. I think that's a fantastic choice too.
Oh yeah.
Maybe even dabbling in all of the above. It doesn't have to be like all of those immense resources that Amanda might have at her disposal at this point. It doesn't have to flow into just one thing. And I think, Matt, at the heart of this question in a lot of ways, is how to transition from being a dedicated saver over an extended period of time to someone who can spend money on things they enjoy without going overboard. And I think it takes time and intentionality to do that, right? I think the rudder moves slowly, but it's also something that we should be seeking to do. It's kind of this atrophied muscle if we've been so good at saving and investing that we need to build to be able to spend mindfully. And so,
yeah, this is why we have the craft beer equivalent, is because this isn't a muscle that we want you to have let atrophy, because if there are some small ways that you know that you like to spend money, well, over time
you can ramp those up.
Yes, hopefully there's a way that you can expand on those things. Like I remember, like early on in our relationship, pouring you a finger or two of Talisker, one mm-hmm. of my favorite whiskeys, one of my favorite scotches specifically. And where did we get to go last year? you and I were drinking Talisker at the distillery
from the source
on the coast of the Isle of Skye in Scotland, after which we walked up the hill and enjoyed some freshly caught oysters. These aren't things that you and I could have ever dreamt of doing, right? But we, as I was thinking through, I was just like, well, what's something?
It's like a seed that's germinating.
And, yes, yeah. And it's kind of growing into this beautiful plant. But that's why we want folks to think through before they reach sort of the end of the race and are like, oh, well, I crossed the finish line or whatever they feels like the finish line. It's like, well, no, it's more like a journey. It's not like a race. Like, we're not trying to race to get there. We're just trying to, we want you to enjoy the journey. And so much of what makes the journey fun are the things that are around you. Like, not just the things, like drink, but the people, like yeah. You know, like the fact that you and I were able to do that together with our wives. That was huge. That was so much fun.
I think something else worth pointing out here is to think outside the box, get a little weird with it. Makes me think of our friend Carl, who suffered from the same issue, which he would readily admit and has admitted on our podcast before, Mr. 1500. And one of the things he chose to
do... We'll link to his episode in the show notes.
It was great. And I have so much respect for Carl. Love the guy. And it's worth kind of going along for the ride with him. One of the things he decided to do, because he's got more money than he'll ever be able to spend, because he's very frugal and he's been a good investor, he spent $10,000 to bring one of his favorite bands to a local spot that he owns and invited all of his friends to come for free. Like, he just basically threw a raging party. And I think that's such a great way to spend money. Like, why the heck not?
Carl is his own frat house.
Right. I don't know if they were doing keg stands or not, but still, this sounds like a... And he invited us.
And there was quality beer involved, though. And I was so sad that we could... We already had plans. But
too hard to fly out to Colorado for that. But
it was not meant to be.
But
when
he announced that, I was like, this is exactly the kind of stuff...
I was so happy for
him. Yeah, it totally moved the happiness dial for him in a big way. And 10 grand at this point for him was like a drop in the bucket to invite his favorite band. And so maybe, I don't know, Amanda, think outside the box. What are some maybe weird stuff that I could do that I maybe normally wouldn't consider? Emily and I thought about that. Man, we didn't end up doing it, but literally renting a cool place for our 40th birthday, providing all the food and drinks and having all our friends there. And what a fun night that would have been if we had actually had if we had actually made it happen. So
the gumption.
Yeah. But it wasn't money that prevented that. It was all these other things that were happening in our lives. It just felt too difficult to pull off.
There's other considerations as well.
But those are the kind of things. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe you throw a party. Maybe you just dial back at work so you can enjoy more free time. I don't know what it is, but
I think that's huge. I think going part-time is massive, because I think for a lot of folks, and what this is something that Amanda said, she says, I haven't thought much about the next goal. And what happens when you work less? You have more time on your hands. So there's a twofold benefit here, in my opinion. One, there's a lot of folks, they don't necessarily love what they do. Like, they're working in a stressful environment and it's taking a toll on their mental health. It's taking a toll on their bodies. And so the ability to dial back on that a little bit could significantly increase their happiness. So there's a win, right? But then the second win is the fact that, well, what have I gained from that? Not only what have I left behind, which is stress, but what have I moved on to? What am I now gaining? I'm gaining more time. And when you have more time, you have the ability to think through, oh, yeah, what do I want the rest of my life to look like? This isn't something that you have to wait to think about while you're on your deathbed.
Yeah.
This is Amanda, you have the ability to start asking yourself these questions now, which is an amazing benefit to not have postponed this all the way to the end of your life, basically.
But, it feels I don't know, can I actually dial it back and work 20 hours a week instead of 40? Probably, right?
Yes.
It sounds like you probably have enough excess that's a real possibility for you if that's something you desire. One of the other replies, Matt, that I thought was super cool, Jackie said, it's an art to figure out what we want. Let imagination and fantasy help figure it out. I thought that was so well said. And Ryan also, he had a great reply about visualizing the future. He said, what will you wish you had done when you're 70? Start to prioritize some of those experiences now. And it made me think, my dad literally is 70 right now. And something we've talked about is going to hike the Camino Santiago in Spain together. And guess what? That's not something he'll be able to do in all likelihood in 10 years. So we got to get on it if we're going
to
do it, right?
He needs to start hiking some now. I mean, even now that would be difficult. I think it'd be difficult for us. But but yes, if you can make that a priority, though, is what you're saying.
Yeah. One of the things you won't be able to do 5, 10, 15 years from now that you can only do today.
Yeah, there are going to be certain limitations. You talked about dabbling, maybe all of the above sort of approach, select D, all of the above.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this with Scott Rick on last week's episode, but the ability to experiment, Amanda, I think that's huge. And if you're not totally sure which direction you want to go, just start saying yes to a lot of stuff. that isn't going to necessarily overcommit you. Like, go to the fundraiser, talk to the people, have the conversations, because I feel like you never know, like, what life might throw your way. Joel, I haven't even told you this. I had a conversation with somebody at a fundraising auction. He's another volunteer, and he is a part of an advertising company, and they own LED billboards in Times Square. And he's
wow.
What do you do? I was like, well, I got a podcast. And he said, well, we always have vacancies, and so maybe we'll get you guys up there. And I said, that would be awesome. How do we make sure that
we'll fly to New York just to take a picture in front of that?
Yes, I would. But I haven't heard back from him. We'll see if that, we'll see if that pans out. I'm not necessarily going to hold my breath. But
he tells everybody that.
Yeah. It's a great line for the ladies.
That's right.
But what I'm pointing to here is the fact that, I guess, had I not been there and been willing to have that conversation with somebody, that would not even be on the table. And if you have time on your hand and you have additional money on hand and you're trying to figure out what to do with that time and money, then a bunch of little experiments, yep. I think, is a way to kind of figure that out.
Yep, agreed. And the other last thing I would say is just, I think there is something really helpful about continuing to bank those dollars for future unknown things, right? It's the things that you will partake in the future that matter a lot, that might require a lot of cash, that you just don't know what they are yet. It makes me think, Emily and I were banking for the future when we didn't really know what we were going to spend on, and then she ends up going to grad school, and boom, we're super glad we were doing it. Like, we
got the money here to do it.
We didn't know that was coming, and then, like, pretty soon, within a year's time, we were like, okay, cool. This is the direction we're going to go in. You're going back to school. Okay, this is going to be pretty costly. Good thing we were saving ahead, even though we didn't know we were saving for. So I think that can be beneficial. I also think, I guess, that can be a cop-out.
It's a double-edged sword, because that's the thing where you could say, well, I don't know, but I'm doing good. I'm going to keep earning money because I'm making bank.
And you can do that until you die.
If you keep going at it with that mindset, like, it's so important to have a goal. And I think she would attest to this, the fact that she was working towards this dream house that she's got. She has seen the power of having something like that that you're looking towards and working towards. And so, figure out what the next goal is, Amanda. We wish you the best, and reach back out. Let us know, I guess, what it is that you have set as the next.
What's that next piece of cheese you're going after?
Yeah. I was going to try to think another word for goal, but my mind went blank. But all right, man. Let's get back to our beer. This was a Dunkel. Specifically, it was called Alpsy. This is a Munich-style lager. What were your thoughts?
Okay. To me, this beer was the definition of malty. It was dark. It was roasty.
It's the first word I wrote down.
For people who don't love stouts, this is almost like a light version of a stout because it's got some of those characteristics, but it's not overly thick or overly intense. It is very approachable, malty, dark beer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you know that you don't like IPAs, you want to look at some of these more malt-forward beers. So like a brown ale, a Dunkel, some of those darker European beers certainly would do it for you. But
it's very old school too, because it's like an older German style beer, right? Mm-hmm. So they just had, to me, it feels like I'm drinking history.
Tastes like you're drinking old dusty textbooks. Like, literally, it's like liquefied.
In the best way possible.
Liquefied whole wheat bread is another thing that came to my mind, where it feels like you're eating the fruit of the land.
It's filling.
Yeah. But Mike and Christy, thank y'all so much for donating this one to the podcast. And Joe, that's going to be it. Listeners can find show notes up on our website at howtomoney.com. There you can find that conversation we had with Carl not too long ago. Mm-hmm. And
one of the ways he uses real estate to investing to completely avoid taxes on income that he makes. Pretty cool. So,
that's right.
Be sure to check that episode out if you haven't listened to it yet.
Nice tease.
Yeah, but that's going to be it for this one, buddy. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out. Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.